What's up, everybody? Guess who's hosting a new podcast? No Mercy with Stephen A. Smith. Listen as I pull back the curtain on everything beyond the world of sports, interviewing influential guests, outspoken celebrities, and thought leaders across the political, financial, and social spectrum. You know me, I'll give you my unbiased opinion. A No Mercy episode drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. No Mercy with Stephen A. Smith, a presentation of Cadence 13 and Odyssey Studio, available on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to your podcast.
The listening you love is on the free Odyssey app. Your trusted local radio stations, coverage of your favorite teams, live news from your hometown, and millions of podcasts on demand. Best of all, you can completely customize your listening experience. Follow topics you care about, like leagues and teams. Pause or rewind your local sports and news, and add shows to your queue to catch up later. There's a lot to listen to, so get started and download the free Odyssey app today.
Live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of CBS Sports Radio here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to a Tuesday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all of our great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158, and that free Odyssey app. 855-212-4CBS, number to jump on in, 855-212-4227. You can always get at me on Instagram where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. We are coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Whether you're looking to purchase a new home or refinance yours, Rocket Mortgage can help you get there. For home loan solutions that fit your life, well, Rocket can. And coming up an hour 20 from now, used to play for the Chiefs and the Jets, Mike DeVito is going to stop by. But first up, producing this extravaganza for the next 4 hours is no other than Hot Take Hickey.
I don't know about that Hot Take Hickey.
There's a lot on the table today. Phillies beat the Braves. Phillies go up 1-0 against Atlanta, the defending World Series champions in the NLDS. They win 7-6. Currently, you do have the Mariners going up against the Astros. Mariners on the road in game one, up 6-3 in the bottom of the six. You will have the Guardians and the Yankees later at 7:37 p.m. Eastern. And you will also at 9:37 p.m. Eastern have Padres and Dodgers. You have the start of the hockey season tonight, all fired up for the puck to drop here at Madison Square Garden between the Lightning and the Rangers. But we got to start today's show off with what was a very interesting football game last night. And there's many angles that you could approach this lead when talking about that Monday night football game to cap off week 5 in the National Football League. Chiefs were down 17-0. They come back. Another great comeback by Kansas City. Then all just the idiotic analytic decisions that were made by Andy Reid, Josh McDaniels, just back and forth. A lot of things that did not make sense to me. But those is what that's what the numbers say now. And whatever the numbers say, you got to do what the numbers say, not use your gut, not use your head, and actually use logic. But we'll get into all that, and we'll unpack all that throughout the duration of the show. We talked about this issue greatly yesterday. And I know we were on the air when the issue from what we originally were talking about with the Tampa Bay game where Grady Jarrett got called for a roughing the passer on Tom Brady, which was a disgrace. That penalty was one of the worst things you saw from week 5 in the NFL. And we did have a poll question yesterday. What was the worst thing that you saw on an NFL Sunday? And that was the big time leader in the clubhouse. 75.8% of our listening audience said Brady roughing the passer was the worst thing they saw on that NFL Sunday compared to the Wentz interception at the goal line, Cliff and Kyler just being so idiotic when it came to the decision to slide short of the first down, then spike the football on 3rd and 1 to make it 4th and 1. You get into Brandon Staley's moronic 4th down decision making. But so many people yesterday, including myself, being the biggest Tom Brady fan there is, were irate that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers got gifted a 1st down and you didn't know how to tackle the quarterback, and you'll never know how to tackle the quarterback because there's no other way that Grady Jarrett was allowed to hit the quarterback or a different approach. There's nothing you could say to alter the action to not get a flag thrown because he did nothing wrong. And now we thought that was probably the most criminal flag thrown from this weekend in football, it wasn't. Even though that was disgraceful, that penalty, basically it was hold my beer and we want to mess this up even more. Because when Derek Carr last night gets hit by Chris Jones and he fumbles the football, and as the ball is loose, Chris Jones falls on it, or basically the ball just goes right to his stomach and he lands on Derek Carr, what else are you supposed to do? And this is a big time problem in the NFL. And I know there's always a heightened awareness when it comes to protecting the quarterback. I'm not going to say player safety, because there's a lot of times the NFL says, oh, we love player safety. We care about player safety. We do everything for our players. And then, I don't know, they'll add an extra game to the regular season because it benefits their pockets. Or they'll only care about player safety when they're getting sued and ignore concussions for years and years and years and years. Or when it comes to protecting what makes the most money for this league from a player standpoint, the quarterback position. And roughing the passer has been down this year. I did see from Tom Pelissero earlier this morning, but when you recently had what did occur with Tua Tagovailoa, which him getting what I thought was a concussion, basically being unavoidable, what was avoidable, though, was putting him back in the game. I know he played that second half up against the Bills, and then the next week they play on Thursday Night Football and he gets knocked out of the game. That was all avoidable. But Tua initially getting hurt is something that you can't avoid. Because, though, the NFL got blasted by shows like ours and shows around the country on the radio and television, they become sensitive to the issue and they say, okay, we need to acknowledge what happened was wrong without saying it. And now the officials know that, whether they got notice or not, and anything that is close now is going to go in favor of the quarterback. But you also have to use logic here. And when you get into the Tua situation, Tua getting knocked out of a game and then being put back in, then playing in the second half because you had a faulty process in the protocols on being cleared for a concussion, and even the NFLPA was furious about it, and they fired the independent doctor, and then allowing him on the field a few days later, just because you had action A doesn't mean the action B response should be when you have a normal, simple tackle against Tom Brady or Derek Carr, because you saw it twice this weekend. Now we have to be flag happy and just throw flags all over the field. And this just annoys the crap out of me, because I don't know what else Chris Jones or Grady Jarrett are supposed to do. It was a textbook tackle, both of them. And I thought the Grady Jarrett one was bad. This one last night was even worse, and I didn't think it could get even worse. So that was baffling, what we saw on Monday and what we also saw on Sunday. And I'm furious about it, but there's nothing that I could do, because how many times do we bitch on this show? I don't know what a catch is. I don't know how you call a pass interference, and I don't know how to tackle the quarterback. And even the players are laughing at it. I talked to Antoine Winfield Jr. after Ion Football. He said he doesn't even know how to tackle the quarterback anymore. Chris Jones said the same thing last night. And I also saw that Chris Jones after the game said him and Derek Carr were laughing about it. And Derek Carr even knew that they got away with one. Think about that. The quarterback that benefited from it even knew that was jackassery. I did, though, hear a great suggestion last night from Chris Jones. And I didn't even think about this. And good on him, because his post-game interview was awesome last night when addressing reporters. Chris Jones says roughing the passer penalties need to be reviewable. Listen up.
I think now to evolve roughing the passer and protecting the quarterback is essentially what we're doing in this league. We got to be able to look at roughing the passers in the booth, because it's happening so fast. Maybe we can change that, because now it's getting absurd. You know what I'm saying? Now it's causing teams games. You know, that was a fourth down stop on Grady Jarrett. That team would have got the ball back, and you know, who knows what would have happened. But for them not to be able to look at that, you know, when you sit on videos, you know, you can, you know, and faster, when it's faster and you're on the field, it happened that fast, you know, the ref, they might see something different. But when they're able to, like, look at the video and see that it's not roughing the passers, a lot of these roughing the passers would be called back.
Chris Jones is 100% right that they should make roughing the passer reviewable. I would actually, here would be what I would do. You could challenge one penalty flag per game. Now, my only concern about this, and I mean any penalty, holding, pass interference, roughing the passer, you could get one challenge per game on a penalty. But even with me saying that, I wonder how effective that would even be, because in theory, yes, it'd be checks and balances. Official makes a bad call, you could have someone review it and then overturn it. But let me remind you, remember when they made pass interference reviewable? Not many times was pass interference overturned. It seemed as if there was an unwritten understanding from the NFL to the officials, unless if it is egregious, and I mean over the top egregious in a huge spot that is going to determine the outcome of the game, we're going to stick with your call because we don't want more attention to be caused to maybe an officiating problem in the NFL. And I have sympathy for the refs. Now, I know we don't all love officials. They don't have an easy job. Sometimes they make boneheaded decisions and they throw a penalty flag that should not be thrown. But you also don't know what they're being told to have a heightened awareness on. And the NFL could deny it and lie to us and lie right through the skin of their teeth that, oh, they didn't tell the officials to watch quarterbacks this year in the last 2 weeks because of what happened with Tua Tagovailoa. They absolutely did. And now that is why in a year where through the first 4 or 5 weeks, the actual roughing the passer calls are down, but the last 2 weeks, we've seen a heightened awareness to it and an uptick in it. And it's no surprise that you get one on Sunday and Monday. But what is surprising about it is, I don't know what else you should do. Like, these are large men moving at high speed in a contact sport. If you're a defender, you have to get to the quarterback and take the quarterback down. If you go low, I get it, flag. If you use your hand and smack the quarterback's head, flag. We know what you can't do. But when it comes to Grady Jarrett just simply grabbing Tom Brady and throwing him to the ground, and it wasn't violent, why is that a flag? And then last night, Chris Jones tackles Derek Carr, the ball comes loose, the ball goes right into him, and he falls in the... Like, what else is he supposed to do? So that is why I like the measured take from Chris Jones, where he didn't just blast the league, because how many players could just blast the league? All of them. I could blast the league. I'm blasting the league right now. But he offered a suggestion. And I think in theory his suggestion is good. I just don't know how effective it will be, because I could only judge from what we saw last time we were reviewing penalties. And the last time we reviewed a penalty, which was pass interference, there was a very minimal change in the actual call on the field. Because I remember watching, any time there was pass interference, that was like a big deal that year, coming out that whole Saints debacle. It would be, like during breaks of games on CBS or Fox, there's a pass interference here, and they would go to the game, they would show you the pass interference, and 9.9 times out of 10, honestly, it felt like, they didn't overturn the call. So I like Chris Jones's idea. I just don't know how effective it will be, but I'm okay with putting a checks and balance in place. And then that's on the NFL if they review what you saw on Sunday in Tampa and Atlanta and then on Monday between the Chiefs and the Raiders. And if the NFL wants to watch that play again and again and again and say, yeah, the referee was right and we're going to keep the call in the field, then that shows you how much of a clown show it actually is. I get why they want to protect the quarterback, but you need to protect the quarterback in reason. And the way that that was officiated against Grady Jarrett and then also Chris Jones was unreasonable and just idiotic. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Should we have roughing the passer reviewed? And what do you make of the Grady Jarrett situation and also Chris Jones from Sunday and Monday? 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. When we return on the Zach Gelb Show, who misses who more? Is it Aaron Rodgers not happy right now with some players in the Packers locker room? Or is it Davante Adams, who was so frustrated last night when the Raiders lose once again and they have one win on the season, that he elected to shove, let's just say, a member of the media, which was not a good look for Davante Adams. So who misses who more? Is it Aaron Rodgers missing Davante Adams more or Davante Adams missing Aaron Rodgers more? I have a thought on that, and I'll give it to you coming on back in 5 minutes on CBS Sports.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
Here's our poll question for today. This is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Who misses who more, Davante Adams or Aaron Rodgers? The Green Bay Packers really have not played a clean game of football all year. They just lost to the Giants in London. They are now 3-2. If the season were to end today, and I know it's only 5 weeks, but the Minnesota Vikings would win the division. Not only do the Vikings have a better record, they are 4-1, but Minnesota also beat the snot out of the Green Bay Packers in week one. You look at the Las Vegas Raiders, who have Davante Adams. Davante Adams last night, he goes off in the contest for 124 yards on 2 touchdowns, only had 3 receptions, though, and you could clearly tell through all the games that Davante Adams has played so far with the Raiders, and it's only been 5, and they are 1-4. They've been disappointing. They had a lot of close, awful defeats. Carr threw 3 interceptions. They lose 24-19 to the Chargers. They blow a 20-0 lead against the Cardinals. They lose in overtime when Hunter Renfrow fumbled the football, 29-23. They come back and then fall short to Tennessee, 24-22. Whoop-de-damn-do, you beat the Broncos. The Broncos stink. And then last night, you're up 17-0. And I don't know, lead is safe up against Kansas City, but you end up losing that game. And there was a moment in that game where Adams gets the big-time catch on the big-time throw for Derek Carr, and it just felt like, okay. There was multiple times in that game, even after having to overcome adversity, that you said, wow, the Raiders may actually do this. And they end up losing. And after the loss to the Chiefs and then also the Giants, you really heard frustration or saw frustration from Rodgers and Davante Adams. Because Aaron Rodgers, if you heard him after the game, he was annoyed at Jair Alexander because I guess Jair Alexander said, oh, I'm not worried about this loss. If we lose next week when you play the Jets or something like that, then I'll be worried. And Rodgers was asked about that after the game, and he goes, yeah, I'm going to put an end to that right now. I love Jair Alexander, but we're not operating in that mindset. And he gave some line of, I'm a positive guy, and I believe the words you say really could impact the actions of games and the preparation and the vibe in the locker room. So you really heard, I don't want to say a disdain, but a frustration level in the voice of Aaron Rodgers. And then Davante Adams last night, who by all accounts is a good dude in the league. Davante Adams last night, walking off the field, pushes a poor little camera guy. Like, what was the point of that? It's because he was frustrated, because he's not used to losing. So you have the Packers, who the last 3 years, 13 wins, 13 wins, 13 wins. I know they didn't have the postseason success, and this year they're 3-2. It's not only that they're 3-2, they haven't played a good game of 60 minutes of football yet. And their offense is very sporadic. And on the other side, Davante Adams, he's putting up big numbers, like 141 yards against the Chargers, 101 yards against Denver, 124 last night. But a guy that's used to winning is now stuck in a losing situation in Las Vegas, and he's 1-4. So you could tell Rodgers misses Davante Adams, and Rodgers didn't want Davante Adams to go, but Rodgers clearly misses him when he has to rely on Romeo Dobbs and Christian Watson, and I know he likes Alan Lazar, and I know he loves Randall Cobb, but Randall Cobb in the year of 2022, old man Cobb, should not be the leading wide receiver in any game. So there is clearly a void that Roger misses in Green Bay, and it's his old number one wide receiver stud in Davante Adams. And for Davante Adams, I know you left money on the table to go to Las Vegas. You wanted to go to Las Vegas, I believe, so your grandma could go see the games, and you wanted to be closer to home and play with your college teammate in Derek Carr, but you can't be happy. Like, I know you have money, And I know, right, you're closer to home, so those things make you happy. But in terms of wins and losses, and you being a competitor, when you throw the money and the situation of where you're playing out of it, and you just look at just the games, he can't be happy right now. And he showed it last night, because that was out of character for Davante Adams. So the way that we've viewed and looked at Davante Adams the last 5-6 years, to push a camera guy, that's not someone with a resume like that. So both those guys are extremely frustrated. So it begs the question, who misses who more? And the early returns right now, Aaron Rodgers, 54.5%. Davante Adams, 45.5%. Before I give you my answer, because I thought about this very long, and I think my answer may surprise some people. Hot take, Hickey, what's your take on this?
I'm going with Aaron Rodgers missing Davante Adams more because you watch through 5 games. This offense is not very good. There is really no threat, like 5 yards beyond the line of scrimmage. Like you watch, especially on Sunday morning, every single pass that's completed is like one of those quick screens. Catch, throw. Like anytime he tried to throw the ball deep, whether it's Alan Lazard, Romeo Dubs, Randall Cobb, overthrowing them, not on the same page. You just see the connection is nowhere near what it used to be. And this offense is really struggling so far to consistently put up points. I think it's Aaron Rodgers right now still missing Davante Adams more than vice versa.
I'm going Davante Adams. I hear everything that you say, and both clearly miss each other. But when it gets to more, here's the tiebreaker for me. When you think about the Green Bay Packers, and I know you've been down on Green Bay before the year started, but they're 3-2 in an NFC that is really wide open. You would still anticipate that the Green Bay Packers win double-digit games and at a bare minimum make the postseason.
Bare minimum make the postseason, yes, probably win 10 games. Their schedule is manageable.
The Raiders are not making the postseason. We could already say that. I know they got off to a slow start. They had to deal with a lot off the field last year. But this team is 1-4. I know the AFC is not as strong as what we thought it was. But I don't see a path for that team with how many close games that they've lost, where then all of a sudden with a bad defense, an offense that really, you have all these weapons. I know Waller didn't play last night. You had Renfro made a Pro Bowl last year. Davante Adams is great, but it seems like right now through the first few games of the season, Josh Jacobs is their most reliable piece. And I don't believe that's going to now become a run-first offense where they run with all those weapons when you get fully healthy. But I look at that team, that offense is good. It's not great. And defensively, they're not great. And we know on the offensive line, they have a lot of problems and a lot of issues. I don't see a path. I don't see a road 5 weeks into the season, especially with all these devastating losses and knowing that Derek Carr is not a clutch quarterback, is not a great quarterback. Yeah, he did well last year, but you don't see that consistently from Derek Carr where you go, wow, that has to be my franchise quarterback. I just don't see a way that the Raiders are going to make the playoffs. So that is why I go with Davante Adams, because I think Davante Adams, when it gets into December, when it gets into January, and I know they did not win a championship the last 3 years, but he's used to winning back-to-back-to-back 13 games. He is accustomed to, bare minimum, getting to divisional round weekend and playing in 2 NFC title games in the last 3 years. He's going to be sitting at home, and yeah, he may be in Vegas. Life may be wonderful. He's got a contract closer to his family. But the competitor of Davante Adams, which clearly still exists, even though it was a boneheaded decision last night to shove that cameraman, and it was a bad move by Davante Adams, it shows you that he's frustrated with the results, and a little thing like that, someone getting in his way, is going to make him blow up. Because he knows his team is failing, and his team is not going to be in the postseason. Where Aaron Rodgers, yeah, the window is closing. Sure, I only think he's probably max going to play 2 more years. You would think, who knows, they're trying to dissect and get inside the cabeza of one Aaron Rodgers. But for Aaron Rodgers, he'll still be in the postseason. And even though the Packers right now look doom and gloom, even though the Packers right now don't have a ton of life on the offensive side of the ball, if they run the football a little bit more, which you realize when LaFleur first got there, That was a big reason why I thought Rodgers' MVP awards were going to start to go away. And now he ended up winning back-to-back MVP awards because you saw an uptick in them running the football. Until they developed that chemistry with guys like Romeo Doubs, Christian Watson, the younger wide receivers on this team, when you have A.J. Dillon and Aaron Jones, it probably behooves the Packers to run the football more or use them more in the short passing game to dump the ball off to them, even though that has to alter the approach. But I still look at this Packers team as a team that at the end of the year, they'll be in contention. Because you look at the NFC, yeah, Giants are off to a hot start. They can make the playoffs. Are they going to be a Super Bowl contender? I don't think so. The Eagles look like a Super Bowl contender. The Cowboys are playing like a Super Bowl contender, but we got to see if Dak, when he comes back, if he's going to elevate that team. In the North, the only team that could be on your level is the Vikings. In the South, it's Tampa and then everyone else. And in the NFC West, the Rams look down. They have a bad offensive line. The 49ers are starting to look like they may win that division, even though it's very early just because of their hard-nosed style of defensive play. And I can't trust Arizona, and I don't trust Seattle. So everything is still there for the taking for Green Bay. And it's up to Rodgers to put in the extra work and develop that chemistry quickly with Christian and Romeo. But he still has hope for this season. For the Raiders, there's no more hope anymore. They already have 4 losses. They're not going to the playoffs. So that's why I think Davante Adams will end up this year missing Aaron Rodgers more than Aaron Rodgers will miss him, even though we could all acknowledge they both miss each other, whether they want to admit it or not. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Who misses who more? Is it Aaron Rodgers or Davante Adams? Right now, 56% agree with Hickey that it's Aaron Rodgers, and 44% agree with me that it is Davante Adams. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227 is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio, across all of our great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, SiriusXM Channel 158, and that free Odyssey app. When we come on back, we will play a little overreaction or proper reaction as we wrap up week 5 in the NFL.
Hey, I'm Thamie Redwood, host of the podcast Beyond Black History Month. Here's reason number 568 million of why you should be listening. From in-depth reporting on the shortage of black sperm to how one House of the Dragon star is dealing with online trolls who don't love seeing black dragon riders.
I can't lose sleep over that, over worrying about things that are beyond my control.
Listen and subscribe to Beyond Black History Month on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? Guess who's hosting a new podcast? No Mercy with Stephen A. Smith. Listen as I pull back the curtain on everything beyond the world of sports. Interviewing influential guests, outspoken celebrities, and thought leaders across the political, financial, and social spectrum. You know me. I'll give you my unbiased opinion. A No Mercy episode drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. No Mercy with Stephen A. Smith. A presentation of Cadence 13 and Odyssey Studio. Available on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to your podcast.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
It is The Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We're going to talk about Draymond Green's mother in just a second. Let me just provide a disclaimer. I hope Draymond Green, when we're about to talk about his mother, does not show up to our 345 Hudson Street studios and start screaming, "Keep my mother's name out your bleeping mouth," and then punch me like he punched Jordan Poole. So we're going to take a risk here and hope that Draymond Green doesn't show up to our very fine CBS Sports Radio studios. So this Draymond Green situation, I don't want to say that it was starting to go away, but he's walking away from the team from now, and then he'll eventually come back, and I think it's very convenient that he's going to take some time off when it's the preseason and training camp and all that. Hey, if that's the time that you need to take time away and hopefully nothing serious is going on, then it's really not any kind of punitive action. And I know that the Warriors said they were going to handle this internally, and either someone got the bag or someone in that organization thought, I actually want to expose this video because what Draymond Green did to Jordan Poole can't be covered up. So maybe it was a mixture of both. But regardless, that video got out. The video was horrible. Draymond Green doesn't look good in it. And we'll see when he returns. But in the aftermath of the reaction last week and then seeing the video, You would think, Ryan, there's probably nothing else really more that we could say until he comes back and Jordan Poole and him, they smooth things over, what the deal is. Jordan Poole, you think, is expected to get a new contract soon. Draymond Green said it was not contractually related, even though he's due to get a new contract as well. This story, not that it goes away, but it kind of gets put right on the back burner until Draymond Green makes his triumphant return to the Golden State Warriors, you would think.
At this point, yes. You're 100% right.
Well, I just saw an article via Barstool. And I don't know what the tweet that was sent to her first, but Draymond Green's mother, who is verified on Twitter, she responded to a post, and I can't see what was actually going on now. I just see the screenshots. Because after her response, Draymond Green's mother deactivated her account. You go to it, it says, this account no longer exists. Because I saw the screenshots, I go, why is there only screenshots here? And you know, a screenshot could always get edited, or you pretend it's like an Athletic article and it's not really an Athletic article. I wanted to make sure that this was legit. And then I go to her account, and her account says it no longer exists. So I was reading this via Barstool Sports that Draymond Green's mother said this. That wasn't a sucker punch. Dre didn't aggressively go to Poole. His hands were down. Man to man, you go over to talk to ask what's up, what you say. Got shoved and reacted. ... End of story. Do you understand the thought process of Draymond Green's mother there, Hot Take Icky? And so simple. Hey, Draymond went over, approached Jordan. Jordan then shoved my son back. And then that's what happened, and he reacted, end of story. That's a little bit of a tough end of story for me, because I'm just going to go out on a limb here. It isn't normal that even when it was a light shove by Jordan Poole, and your son did go over to Jordan Poole first, that a light shove from Jordan Poole, basically, Draymond, I don't want to deal with your crap today and your antics, get away from me, for your son to then clock a teammate right back, that does not seem like a normal reaction. And, oh, yeah, he just reacted. End of story on that one.
That is unbelievable for every person in the world, except for one, which happens to be Draymond Green's mother. I could see her believing that, but
because that's
no one
her
else.
Own son.
Right. And the Green, I'll at least speak for Draymond Green, seems to sometimes think his own actions are, you know, he's the innocent one.
Yes. And he gets provoked by the officials.
Right. He's
provoked
the victim.
By the league. Provoked by his own teammates now, even.
Right.
It's always everyone else's fault but Draymond Green. And maybe this is why he despises the media so much, because a lot of times the media tries to hold you accountable. They question things that go on when the media, and sometimes it's not fair, and then a lot of times it is fair when it comes to Draymond Green, when they cause attention or try to hold him accountable, it's, oh, shame on the media, shame on the media. And he's going to then go start his new media kind of movement, as he likes to call, which I have no problem with Draymond Green having a podcast. I actually find this podcast at times to be entertaining, and I find Draymond Green to be highly entertaining. And sometimes I like Draymond, and sometimes I can't stand Draymond Green. But there's really no defense of what he did from what we've heard so far. Now, I get it, right? A mother's always going to protect their own. But I've always said this about athletes. And then moms or dads or family members that tweet about them. If I was in that position, I would not want my family tweeting about me. Now, I get it. It is Draymond Green's mother trying to defend her son when everyone's blasting her son. But when it's something controversial like this, and when it's something that Draymond Green even apologized for, and has admitted that he was in the wrong, to what degree, that's a different conversation, but he's acknowledged that he did something wrong and he should not have done that. You would, not that you have to send out a text or something like that, but I always think the athlete doesn't look good when they're clearly in the wrong and then their family comes to their defense, even though the intentions of Draymond Green's mother, and you can understand it, because I would imagine, right, if I got caught up in some big controversy, my mother or father would try to defend me. And there's been times where people have come after me on social media. Now, I know I'm not at the level of Draymond Green. I'm not that delusional. But there's been times where my dad or my mom have seen something and I'm like, oh, I'm going to respond to it. I'm like, no, you're not. You're not going to do anything. You're going to stay in your house. We're going to have a laugh about it. And that's it. Because I don't need my family members to fight my battles. And I get the intentions are good, and I respect and understand where their intentions are. But for Draymond, you want to move past this. And all this does is create more low-hanging fruit for us to pick off of to then talk about this when I was not even anticipating of talking about this today until I saw the mother's response during the break, Rye.
Yeah, you're right. Anytime family members get involved, I don't really see how it ever turns out good. Because most of the time, they're trying to defend their relatives' actions, and most of the time they're getting criticized for something that they shouldn't have done.
Now, I can't see the tweeter she was responding to. Also, there's so many people that are just tweeting at you to get a reaction. And there's so many times there's trolls that will tweet me, like, oh, you're the biggest moron on the planet. And like, yeah, there'll be like one time out of every 20 that I'll respond and try to like dunk on them or have like a little fun with them. And that person will then respond back, oh, yeah, I was just trying to get a reaction out of you, listening to the show every night, love you. It's like, what are we doing here? So it's usually, and it's not human to be able to sit everyone out, but it's usually best to sit a lot of these out when it comes to a lot of random people. I don't know if it was a random person that she was responding to be fair.
You also make a good point. Having family members on social media when you're that famous,
yeah,
probably, like I said, not the best because it really rarely ever works out in your favor. Makes you look good. Or like you said, helps make the story go away because we weren't going to talk about it today. Until Draymond Green's mother responds to a tweet and tries to justify her son's actions when everyone on the planet has seen the video and has come to her own conclusions, which most of them have been he's in the wrong.
And now she deleted her Twitter account.
Probably for the best.
Yeah. All right, let's get to a little proper reaction or overreaction, week 5 edition. Let's get to it.
Z-Man, let's ask a question that no one really thought was coming. The Dallas Cowboys, through 5 games, are 4-1.
Proper.
Most of it has been with Cooper Rush.
Is this the Cowboys or Super Bowl contender?
Yes.
Yeah.
Through 5 weeks, are they Super Bowl contenders, and overreaction or proper reaction?
Proper reaction. Cooper Rush is not going to be starting for the Cowboys the rest of the season. Dak will eventually come back. I don't view Dak on a normal playing field as a Super Bowl contender, but this is not a normal year. The NFC is wide open. They have a great defense. If that line could get better, the run game stays healthy, and Dak just plays good football, they will be in the conversation because who are they competing up against? Eagles are great. I love the Eagles. I like the Eagles in the offseason. I didn't think they'd be this great, though. Buccaneers will eventually get it together. Rams, I'm concerned about. Packers will get it together. There's not a lot of teams in the NFC that you go, oh, wow, you love. Defense could help. We've seen, right, the 49ers not have strong quarterback play and still get very far into the playoffs. So that's a proper reaction to say that the Cowboys are a Super Bowl contender.
Most of these questions are geared towards reaction to the previous week. But I just want to take 1 second here to look ahead because we have a big matchup, Chiefs-Bills, coming off of last night's game. The Chiefs now at home against the Bills are 3-point underdogs. Is it an overreaction or proper reaction, Zach, to say the Chiefs should be favored at home against the Bills on Sunday?
Overreaction. I don't think it is unfair that the Bills are the favorite here. The Bills did a nice job up against Kansas City in the regular season, and they should have beat them last year. I think Buffalo is a more complete team than Kansas City. This game could go either way, and you can never count out Mahomes. But right now, my early read on this Tuesday is that everyone's going to be saying, how are the Chiefs not the favorite? How are they at least not laying 3 at home? Out of respect, and I think a lot of people are going to be betting Kansas City, and I got a feeling Buffalo is going to win the game.
Matt Rhule fired his Panthers head coach yesterday. Today, now questions about the roster. Overreaction, Zach, or proper reaction? The Panthers should trade Christian McCaffrey.
Proper, here's why. Because that team is in a total rebuild now, and that roster, defensively, you got some good pieces. But on offense, I always say this about the running back. You don't overpay for a running back. You don't give a running back a big-time deal unless you're ready to win. The Panthers don't have a quarterback right now. They're going to draft a quarterback in the draft this year. Who even knows if that guy who they draft is going to be ready to start year one? I know you don't want to take away a lot of big-time pieces from a young quarterback of the future. He's got 3 years left in the contract after this year, but he gets hurt too much. So I think you get what you could get now. If you get a second-round pick, maybe even a first-round pick, and then some. You pull the trigger on the deal, and then you start to retool and rebuild the rest of your team with the Panthers. So I think that's a proper reaction that the Panthers should trade him.
Very quick follow-up. Does that make, if they trade him, does that make that Panther job less attractive for a prospective head coach?
I would say no, because I just don't know what... Yeah, you'd rather have Christian McCaffrey, but I don't know what to expect of the guy anymore. He's a great talent, but heading in before this year, he's played 10 games the last 2 years. So I don't think that's the reason why you wouldn't take that job.
The video that circulated after the game outside Devonta Adams, as you mentioned before, pushing down a member of the media, will say after the game, overreaction or proper reaction, Zach? Devonta Adams should be suspended for shoving the media member.
Overreaction. I thought it was disgraceful what he did, but let's not lose our minds here. He should just be fined. I don't think he should get suspended.
And last one, yesterday, when asked what the biggest problem for the Commanders is, why they're in last place compared to the other three teams in the NFC East, Ron Rivera, Commanders head coach, said quarterback. So, Zach, overreaction or proper reaction, Carson Wentz will not finish the season as the Commander starter.
Excluding the possibility of an injury?
Excluding the possibility of an injury, meaning he's benched.
I'm going to say right now that's an overreaction. Eventually, that's got to get pointed at Ron Rivera, because Ron Rivera was the one, and he even said yesterday he doesn't regret it anymore. He was the one that went out and got Carson Wentz and gave up that draft capital to do so when it made no sense to do so. So I think Ron, even though it sounded like yesterday he was definitely turning on his quarterback and throwing his quarterback on the bus, but then also defending him, saying, oh yeah, it's only been a handful of games where he hasn't played. Well, he only played a handful of games. So it was all over the place, that answer. I heard he apologized to the team today. Carson Wentz said it was all good. Knowing Carson the way that I know Carson, I don't know if he'll view that as all good, even though he said that. But I got to think, even with how bad the Commanders are, the only way that they do bench him is if he gets hurt. Now, I know with the draft pick, if he plays 70% of the snaps, then you're going to have to give up a second-round pick instead of a third-round pick. So could that factor into it? Maybe. But I would think that Wentz is going to be on the roster next year. There will just be some competition with Carson Wentz because they're going to be picking in the top 10, and they're going to need to go draft a quarterback in the first 10 picks of this upcoming NFL draft.
The listening you love is on the free Odyssey app. Your trusted local radio stations, coverage of your favorite teams, live news from your hometown, and millions of podcasts on demand. Best of all, you can completely customize your listening experience. Follow topics you care about, like leagues and teams. Pause or rewind your local sports and news, and add shows to your queue to catch up later. There's a lot to listen to, so get started and download the free Odyssey app today.
Hey, I'm Thamie Redwood, host of the podcast Beyond Black History Month. Here's reason number 568 million of why you should be listening. From in-depth reporting on the shortage of black sperm to how one House of the Dragon star is dealing with online trolls who don't love seeing black dragon riders.
I can't lose sleep over that, over worrying about things that are beyond my control.
Listen and subscribe to Beyond Black History Month on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fantasy football leagues are won on the waiver wire and with trades and with savvy starter sit decisions. The Fantasy Football Today podcast will help you along the way with the best advice on how to manage your team and dominate your league. With 8 episodes per week, Fantasy Football Today is the only resource you'll need. Start sit, grade the trade, fantasy cops to settle your league disputes, and so much more. Check out Fantasy Football Today anywhere podcasts are found. Fantasy football leagues are won on the waiver wire and with trades and with savvy starter sit decisions. The Fantasy Football Today podcast will help you along the way with the best advice on how to manage your team and dominate your league. With 8 episodes per week, Fantasy Football Today is the only resource you'll need. Start sit, grade the trade, fantasy cops to settle your league disputes, and so much more. Check out Fantasy Football Today anywhere podcasts are found.